Blog Talk Radio.
Take a licking. There is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call for Super Chicken.
Welcome to the Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer Radio Show, where we give away more chicken coops and chicken-related prizes than anyone else on the planet. We are often imitated, but never duplicated. My name is Andy Schneider, but most know me as the Chicken Whisperer, author of The Chicken Whisperer's Guide to Keeping Chickens. My co-host is the lovely Pat Foreman, author of City Chicks, Chicken Tractor, and other great titles. And some other great titles to come, I understand. Today is Monday, August 20th. Marvelous Monday, as Pat often says. And I would like to thank all of you for tuning in this afternoon on Blog Talk Radio. This is a live radio show that is broadcast around the world. This radio show is all about keeping backyard poultry, show poultry, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Each week, we welcome experts in their field to share their knowledge about different topics, including backyard poultry, show poultry, heritage poultry, gardening, cooking, and, of course, living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Be sure to visit our website, chickenwhisperer.com, where you can follow us on Twitter and become a fan on Facebook. Once again, I would like to thank all of you for tuning in to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. When you need an incubator, think Brensea, the incubation specialist. Brensea has been a world-leading manufacturer of incubators for over 30 years. Incubators from 7 to 380 eggs with high-quality electronic and digital controls, including precise humidity control and programmable egg turning, all at surprisingly affordable prices. Visit them online at Brensea.com. Brensea spelled B-R-I-N-S-E-A. That's Brensea.com or call 1-888-667-7009. Enter the coupon code WHISPER at checkout and save 10% on their incubators, brooders, egg handlers, and other incubation accessories. When you need an incubator, think Brensea. Technology you can trust. Ideal Poultry has been a family-owned and operated business since 1937. Their business is built on customer service and quality poultry, from rare white and brown egg layers to broilers, ducks, turkeys, and bantams. Ideal Poultry is the largest supplier of backyard poultry in the United States, shipping close to 5 million chicks annually. Visit them online at idealpoultry.com. That's idealpoultry.com. Snap-Lock Chicken Coops, the American-made, maintenance-free, plastic hen house. With its double-wall construction and adjustable ventilation, it's the perfect year-round home for your small flock. It will not fade or rot and is unaffected by rain, sun, heat, cold, or chemicals. The removable litter and nesting trays make cleaning a breeze. Every access point is lockable for maximum predator resistance. Snap-lock chicken coops weigh just 40 pounds and snap together in minutes. So spend more time enjoying your flock and less time building and maintaining your coop. For additional information, please visit snaplockchickencoops.com. Also available at mypetchicken.com, critter-cages.com, and chickensforbackyards.com.
And the mighty bird against prejudice continues his fight for law and order. So when you hear that cry in the sky, you'll know it's Super Chicken.
All righty. Thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. It is now time. Yep, it is now time to introduce my wonderful co-host, the compost queen herself, the lovely Pat Foreman. Hey, Pat.
Hey, Whisperer. Yeah, here we are on Marvelous Monday again. How are you doing? Did you have a good weekend?
The weekend was pretty good. It was pretty relaxing. We didn't do a thing, really, on the homestead. I did a little bit of cleaning and organization and laundry here inside the house, but that was about it. We pretty much took this weekend and relaxed, and that was about it. I still go on my 2-mile daily walk every evening with Caleb, and I'm still
good
doing that.
You.
And so. Yeah. But yeah, didn't do that much, and I was so glad to see your number pop there on the switchboard. I know that sometimes you're in the pharmacy, and actually, I want to share something regarding pharmacy. But so I was like, yeah, because I had posted in the chat room as soon as a bunch of folks got in that I'm a little under the weather today, just feeling kind of puny, I'm a little, just kind of tired, just feeling yucky and blah, blah, blah. Yeah, Jen thinks I'm having sympathy pains for her being, her first trimester and being kind of sickly, and so am I. So I'm just kind of like, bleh. So I'm like, put that room. I said, maybe Pat will be in and she can kind of, I'll hang out and run some commercials.
Sure.
Maybe kind of, intervene with the chicken doctor when he comes on, and I can just kind of veg out a little bit. I took my temperature, no fever, exactly 98.6 on the dot. I just kind of feel puny. Those days, just, a little nauseous, a little tummy, a little this, and you just kind of want to sit there with your eyes closed and just take a deep breath. So that's kind of me today. We'll see how long it lasts. I know I've got to make a trip into town here after the show. I'll try to get through that, me and Caleb, and get that done. But, pharmacy. There's a cute little picture going around Facebook. You may have seen it, and it has a lady standing at a counter, and it has a pharmacist handing her a couple of tomatoes and a couple of carrots. And take 2 tomatoes and 2 carrots daily, and at the top it says pharmacy, spelled F-A-R-M, pharmacy. So I don't know if you've seen that or not, Pat, but I think about you every time I see it posted from a friend.
I love that. I so love that. In fact, so many food items should be taken instead of drugs, I think. May food be your medicine and medicine be your food is what I think it was Asclepius said as a way to go. So, yeah, I love it. I love it.
It's gotta be, and I'm sure I'll be in that decision process one day, like so many other of our listeners have been and are still going through this situation where you have to, make that decision. Do I take the chemo? Do I go more natural route? Do I do this?
Oh, Lord.
Can choose. I mean, all that, those hard decisions when you it's easy to say, I'll just do it the holistic way and rely on herbs and things. But when you're faced with that decision, I mean, oh my gosh, I know people choose to do it that way. But, until you were there, it's like hard to say what we're going to do. But I just love that cartoon, Pharmacy, F-A-R-M, Pharmacy, take 2 carrots and a carrot day or an apple or whatever daily and whatnot. So, I think, though, and I'll be honest, I'm not sure really what I base this on other than just personal belief and faith. But, and then, of course, I fall back to thinking the couple of different types of cancers my dad's had and the treatments he's gotten, and which I'm sure he's today for that. But I think about, and it's maybe a true statement with a clause, like, I personally feel with my beliefs and both in my religious beliefs and personal beliefs that there's probably everything on this planet that we need to live long, healthy lives, cure cancer, cure this, cure that. Maybe we just haven't found the combinations of that yet, or maybe we have and people are, this is going to sound, conspiracy theorists, but maybe we have, but we're not making it public because the big pharma and the health care and the money involved. Again, that's conspiracy theorist type speaking, but I think everything that's on this planet, I think that the good Lord put to heal us and to make us live long, healthy lives, maybe we just haven't found the combinations yet. or we've distorted some of the stuff so bad that's it's causing all of these issues. But I think that everything's here that we need to live long, healthy lives. We just due to science, both good and bad, maybe have, you know, what is the cause? Is it microwaves? Is it a combination of preservatives and microwaves? Is it a combination of this, that, and the other? I don't know. Nobody knows. But it's I think the pharmacy. I look at that and I think about you, Pat, and think and go back to that. You know, I really think that there's maybe everything here that we need. We just need to find it. So and I know Doc Brown, talks about a lot of that and some holistic approaches with curcumin and things like that, and the studies that he reads. And then everybody who listens to Doc Brown knows that it's he's not one to just say, oh, there's a study that says it, and then so it must be right. I mean, he studies the study and other studies, and then comes to his, I guess, opinion based on the study and his experience of what may work and not. But anywho, so after a couple of speaking of meds, a couple of tablespoons of Pepto this morning and a little bit of water.
Honey.
But no, it's one of those things. The show must go on, and just like life. And I had a good morning with Caleb. I just got some work done. She's kind of taken over now during the show, and then after the show, I'll probably take him into town and get a few things we need here at the house. But other than that, we're kicking along. We've got a great show. Again, it's Monday. People know that Monday means Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor, founder of First State Vet Supply. And you can visit his business online, firststatevetsupply.com. Basically, it's been said in the chat room, if he doesn't carry it, you don't need it. And bottom line there, or if there's something that he doesn't carry, he can definitely get it for you. But the cool thing about shopping at his establishment is that when you order something, you've got someone with experience with your chickens, with your flock, backing that up. And every order you make will come with directions specifically for your flock, for one bird, six birds, 12 birds, not just mix this packet in 800 gallons of water and then give to your flock. It's not, you know, so you get a bonus there from making that your first stop shop for your chicken health needs. Again, that's firststatevetsupply.com. We've got him on today. He's got several topics today we're going to talk about. Of course, we're going to talk a little bit about the West Nile virus. I know that Dallas is going crazy over there. They're doing aerial spraying and other places around the country as well. And there was an article over the weekend about, you know, the possible dangers of that, the controversy of aerial spraying. And then I see also things on Facebook, Pat, about kids, or these are adults now, that are saying, oh, yeah, I remember back in the day, the pickup truck would come through town and with the big nozzle on the back spraying for things. And me and my friends would ride through the mist with our bicycles following behind. And, you know, that, you know, you see, I'm like, okay, but all the crazy things we did when we were little. But so the controversy there, he's going to talk a little bit about West Nile. He's going to talk a little bit about tube feeding, I think, today. And then his main topic is going to be how the relationship between the sense of taste, the sense of smell, and nutrition, and how kind of all of that together can play into the chicken's behavior. And so he's going to touch a little bit about that. I'm anxious to hear about that. So all of our wonderful Chicken Whisperer fans out there, just have your Chicken Whisperer notebooks ready. We often say that, you know, get that spiral notebook, put CW on the front with a big marker, write down our telephone number on the cover, it never changes, and take all those notes about from all the experts that we have on the show. Let's see.
Are you following the chat room there, Whisperer? They've got all kinds of advice for you and your nausea. You're saying take some ginger and some ginger ale and some saltine crackers. And they're saying old Doc Jacobs used to be fond of recommending to folks showing those symptoms to, one, lose weight, two, quit smoking, and three, have more sex.
Well, I walked about a mile and a half.
And then the ginger ale comes up again.
I'm an advocate of ginger. The only problem with that is finding the good stuff, because if you go
up
ginger ale, it has no ginger in it. It's got a lot of them don't. You know, there's one that I'll buy I think it's, I want to say it maybe Canada Dry, that advertises on the front, made with real ginger. You look at the ingredients, ginger's there, but it's like the last freaking ingredient. And then, of course, what's the first ingredient? High fructose corn syrup. So it's kind of like, yep. Really? Really? So, but no, I understand ginger ale, the saltine crackers, you know, I'm all about that. Jen's pregnant, so having this have more sex issue, you know, from Poet's wife. I think I'm doing everything right, but I think it's just, who knows? Maybe just I'm so used to doing things, and this little quiet lazy weekend maybe just kind of threw me whack. Maybe it was something I ate. Who knows? But
it's just your body. You got to take a time out every now and then. It's just your body talking to it, saying it needs a break. And one of the things I like to do is just fresh ginger grated in hot water, especially in the winter. I'll often just have that as a after dinner or before I go to bed. I just love the fresh ginger and water. How easy can it get? So
absolutely, absolutely. You know, like I said, it's not bad. I have no right to complain because they're, oh, my gosh. I mean, I feel great compared to, I'm sure, a lot of people out there. But I just, when I saw you come on, I was like, Pat's here today, thank goodness. And she can, I don't have to... Go nuts. So, but mainly it's like, well, so maybe I don't have to quite pay attention as much and be crazy. I can just kind of sit here and enjoy the show, close my eyelids, and 1 o'clock kind of run a commercial, maybe about 1:20 run a commercial, and of course, you know, Peter, he's got the gift of gab like us, the gift of educational gab. So, but just someone to kind of ask some questions. Also today. If I can go back over to my notes, I've started a segment, Pat, which is going to be kind of neat. It's called, Blogbusters. And so that's what we're kind of calling it. It's a new segment on the show. We'll try to have it when we have the experts on. And it's called Blogbusters. And basically, I'm having folks email me different types of, whether it be treatments or different types of whatever, out there on blogs and forums. And then some may be right, some may be wrong, some may be quackery, some may just be opinion, all this crazy stuff that you see that even Doc says a lot of times, you know, all the stuff that he's seen on these forums and blogs that are just out there and just like it could possibly be detrimental to your birds. So I thought we're going to start a segment called Blogbusters, and I've gotten a few emails over the weekend, which is great, from people with links to a blog post or links to a particular blog or a link to a forum post, or maybe they just have said, you know, written out, hey, I saw this on a blog, blah, 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 blah. And so we're going to try to, dispel the myths like we do on this radio show a lot of times with our experts. And, you know, sometimes the answer may be, you know, I don't know. It may work. That's just their opinion based on their experience, and that's fine. But at least kind of you know. Or maybe is this dose wrong? Is this dose wrong? What about the diatomaceous earth? What about, I think one today we'll ask Peter and his opinion is, and maybe it just needs to be worded differently on the blogs about, you know, hey, pumpkin seeds eliminate internal parasites. Okay, well, I will quote Dr. Bridget McRae, PhD in poultry scientist, show me the proof. Just because you don't have worms, at least you don't think you have worms, and you've been giving pumpkin seeds, doesn't necessarily mean that they work for that. Have you had a fecal flotation test? Have you actually gone to the vet to see if you have, or just, oh, I haven't seen any worms, and I give them this, and so they may be chock full of worms, and you don't know. So just, you know, maybe it's in my experience, just like when I say, and I've done this for a long time, you know, I occasionally in the summertime, you know, we'll use apple cider vinegar in the waterers because for me, in my backyard, I have seen where it kind of limits and reduces the amount of the algae in my waterers. But, of course, even Dr. McRae will tell me, will show me the proof. And I'll be like, well, the proof is I see it with my own two eyes every day in my backyard during the summer months. But still, there's no, you know, so you know, we're going to be, I'm not going to mention any of the blog names, any of the forum names. We're just going to take some subjects that people have sent me that they're questioning from what they've seen on some of these blogs. Just because somebody researches something on Google and then types it up as their own doesn't necessarily mean it's right, and it could be wrong and detrimental. So that's kind of what we're going to do regarding this segment today. We'll talk about, I'll ask Peter about pumpkin seeds, and there's a couple of others we'll talk about. And we'll just kind of do that as people send their questions in, literally questioning some things they've seen. Some of the answers we get from Dr. McRae and the chicken doctor, maybe, yep, that is correct, or that's our understanding, or you know, that dose is correct, or you know, that's quackery, or you know, that's insane, because if you give this for that, it's, you're doing nothing for them because it's not going to work because it's not a bacteria, it's not a virus, whatever the case may be. So we'll start the Blogbuster segment if we have time later today as well. Let me get over here to the switchboard and see if we've got, yes, let's see, yes, sir, we've got Peter Brown, the chicken doctor, remember, firststatevetsupply.com. And he has just called in on the switchboard, so we're going to head over there right now, bring him live on the air, and say hello, Peter Brown, the chicken doctor. How are you doing today?
Hey, Andy, how's it going?
I'm a little under the weather. I'm glad Pat's here. She's going to kind of – I'm going to hang out. I'm going to veg out and rerun commercials and whatnot and watching the time. But I think Pat's going to be more interactive with you today and kind of asking questions or and feeding some questions maybe from the chat room and things like that. And I'll just be behind the scenes and whatnot. So hope you had a fabulous weekend.
Yep, I did. I had a great weekend. My grandson and I were playing around with the train set for most of the day.
Gotta love that. You gotta love that. I remember that. My dad built me one when I was probably about five, and then we collectively built one together. Probably about 9 or 10, and that thing, it was basically built on a 4x8 sheet of plywood. We had built legs, so you could kind of sit there in a chair, sit under it, and we've got it with thighs, and it had, you could run at least two trains simultaneously with the mountain it went through and different.
You still there?
Yeah, I'm here, Peter. Whisper, you there?
Hello? I'm breaking up?
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, Whisper, you're coming in and out.
Hey, well, over to you, Pat.
Okay. If I can sound check. Yeah. sound check in the chat room, that would be really helpful. And there's a note there, is there a secret word today? Curious chat roomies want to know.
I have no idea.
The answer is no. There's no early password in there. Okay. Well, Peter, I'm so glad you're on today. In fact, I've got a question that apparently fits right in with what you're going to talk about.
Okay.
I've got one of my favorite hens. She's gone with me to festivals and to, you know, she's been the co-presenter.
Okay.
You know, one of the Oprah Henfrey. And let me just check here in the sound room if we're getting if people can hear me. Because maybe we're all blank. Who knows? Okay, that little coop says, yeah, they can hear us. So she's just simply stopped eating. I mean, I've given her everything that I think a chicken just adores, which is would be egg yolk and boiled rice. But she looks fine. Her crop, of course, isn't full, but I don't feel anything sharp in there. She just sits. I've never had a bird like this before.
How old is she?
She's about five now. Yeah, so she's older, but not that old. I mean,
well, no, but
she's
you
out
know.
Of lay. She's out of, you know, she's not been, hasn't been laying most of the summer, but
now she's not eating at all.
At all, that I can tell.
Okay, how long has she been not eating?
Well, my neighbor had her and brought her over. Saturday night, and then I put her in my little intensive care kind of kennel. She has enough space in there, and give her everything. She has been having a few bowel movements. They've been really small and slightly yellowish, but nothing dramatic. I wormed her. I gave her some Safeguard. Oh, come on, I know what that is. So anyway, just a little bit of the paste on the inside of her mouth and of course, some B-complex in her water to kind of give her a little energy boost. And she looks fine. That's the darn. She's not in any stress at all. She shows no sign of you know, being in pain. So,
but, you know, and a lot of times they don't. And putting your finger on exactly what the cause of the inappetence is where the problem lies. It's so difficult to do because obviously we don't have x-rays. Even if we did, it may not show anything. But many times the proventriculus, we've talked about this before, which is the true stomach, it's the glandular stomach of the bird. And any irritation or problems associated with that, the bird ends up not eating, or they become crop bound and they'll eat and the crop just doesn't empty because nothing will get past the inflamed or irritated proventriculus. Can't say that's what's going on with this bird here. Hydration with this bird is going to be, you know, the key. I would make up a slurry of food of your choice, something that's syringeable, and then put a tube down her throat, fill the crop up, see what she does with it.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's just jump starting the system for whatever reason. Sometimes it's something they ate that they may have passed, but it upsets the balance of the digestive system. But there really isn't a tremendous way to put a finger on it and say, oh, that's what this is, that's what that is. I don't know anybody that has had that ability. Birds do this. I'm dealing with one now that has pretty much the same thing, although this bird, we do believe, will now eat on its own. But, it's just a very difficult thing to do. You might try, and I've been successful with this in the past. I don't carry it any longer because it sits around here and it outdates and I end up throwing it away.
Mm-hmm.
But you being a pharmacist, you should be able to hunt this down. It's a dog product called, the product I had at the time was called Prozyme, P-R-O-Z-Y-M-E. And it's a group of digestive enzymes, and they may help not only a bird that's crop bound, but may also help her get back on track eating. But I would tube feed her, I would try to, you know, it's tough when you've got one bird sick and you've got a whole bunch of others in a job or even a premise to take care of, you know, crops and what have you. I don't know, you know, you're a gardener, so I don't know how big your garden is, but by the same token, you know, you've got all these different things to do.
But it's not a problem to take care of her. I mean, I'll give her the time. She's gone boldly where no hen has gone before. Out there being a poultry chicken celebrity.
Sure.
And just
it'll be an experience. It'll be an experience for both of you, as far as, you know, trying to figure out, you know, what's up with the whole thing. But
I'll figure it out. I'll try the tubing. And I did give her a little bit of an oral drench. That went pretty good. But she's just the sweetest little old hen. And she's had a great life. So, you know, if it's just her time, too, that's chickens do come
and we can't tell. Even this other one that I've been dealing with, you know, it's tough to tell whether there's some sort of... Generally, tumors in birds don't form on the inside of the intestine. They can and they do, but generally that's not where you'll find the problem. Usually it's in the body cavity attached to the intestine or to some other organ in the body. So it's very difficult, to say what the deal is with this, why it's happening. I would just...
Well, if she does decide to graduate, I'll do an autopsy on her and report back.
Take pictures, because pictures tell 1,000 words. I don't care what you're doing, how you're doing it, or whatever. The pictures are usually key. they usually tell, you know, exactly what's going on, and it's a very interesting thing, but... keep us informed if you need anything from me. You know, you might even try giving her one metronidazole tablet, split up 250 milligrams to half of it twice a day. See if that, just in case there is anything in there other than antibiotics might do. It's not a big deal.
Yeah.
I
can give her some betaine too. Maybe that would kind of help digest things to get gone through.
But, you know, whatever you can do to entice her. It's an interesting thing because, you know, even foods that you go to your ace in the hole, you say, well, I know they'll eat this, and then they just snub it. They just look at it like, you must be nuts. I'm not eating it, you know, and they just sit there. So it's disheartening because, you're at rope's end is to try to figure out what to do. I've been dealing with one since last week, up and down. One day it's good, next day it's not, and we think we've got it halfway turned around now, but I'm not sure. But hydration is one of the biggest things that I'm finding out here, that birds are dehydrated, eating very, very coarse type foods, which are binding them up, so to speak, and causing all kinds of other problems. So I would definitely keep the bird hydrated, if nothing else, until you can try to figure out what's going on. But I would, if you can get your hands on that Prozyme product, it's not overly expensive. It comes in a one-pound container. It's way more than you'll need. See, that's the problem I had with it,
mm-hmm.
And it's sit around here and sit around and you end up throwing it away. But, keep us informed on it. And like I say, take pictures, because that's where it's at, and makes all the difference in the world.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thanks for your advice on that, Peter.
Sure.
As usual, I'll
sure.
follow through, and I understand we're going to talk about tubing today, I think is what Whisper said. Although I've got my notes here from the last time you did.
Yeah, because of the situations that I deal with on a daily basis, I thought it'd be good to go back over again just briefly, real quick, because I want to cover a fair amount of ground today. We've got a lot of stuff to do here, but. Tubing a bird is not a big deal. We've talked about it before.
I found out. I mean, it's just I was so afraid of tubing a little baby goat, and it's just so easy. I mean, I was really So it's not a hard thing, and it can save a life.
Well, a chicken is extremely easy, because the airway and the esophagus are separated. So the trachea is one place, the esophagus is in the other. A lot of people think that they're going to choke the bird to death by putting something down its throat. I can't tell you how many times I've told people, just take a pill, put in a little piece of bread, shove it down their throat, and go, "Oh, I can't do that. I'll choke them to death." Well, you'd be better. You stand more of a chance of grabbing the chicken around the neck and holding its neck tight of choking them to death than you would with a pill, because you'll not get it down the airway as a general rule. But they just don't understand that the two are separated, and because of that, it makes it easy to tube the bird. So. Looking anatomically at the bird, open the mouth, right behind the tongue and the floor of the mouth, that throbbing little thing that keeps opening up and closing, that's the glottis, and that's where they breathe. And you certainly want to keep any tubing or any liquid or anything away from that area. Big giant hole in the back, that's the esophagus, that's where they eat, and that's where you want your tubing to go. And so bear in mind that when you're tube feeding a bird, you don't want to overdo it, because you can aspirate the bird that way. There is no mechanism to keep anything down in the crop. So if you've got a bird that can't hold its head up, you want to put the minimum amount of liquid in, usually between 10 to 15 cc's. While 10 to 15 cc's may sound like a lot to you, 10 cc's is 2 teaspoons and 3 is a tablespoon. 15 is a tablespoon. So it's not a lot of liquid on a liquid basis, 30 cc's being an ounce. So that'll give you an idea. an ounce is not a huge amount of water, especially in the winter months for a bird to consume. But if they're not going to hold their head up or anything like that, then you have to be a little bit more cautious with it. You do want to make sure that you're not dealing with a bird with a pendulous crop, and that's where...
No, she doesn't have that. But yes.
The crop has become so large and lost its elasticity that it hangs down over the clavicle, which is the wishbone, and then the material gets trapped out there and starts to rot. But you take a piece of tubing, and on the outside of the bird, you go where the crop is, come up under the lower mandible or the lower part of the beak. When you get to the end of the beak, mark that with a magic marker or whatever you want to use to mark it, and then give yourself maybe another foot or so to deal with, so that you can maneuver it around.
Peter, would you repeat that just quickly? What you were doing is you're taking the bird and you're measuring how far you want the tube to go down from the outside of the bird, right?
Yeah, if you look at the clavicle, it's a good marker, because directly behind the clavicle is the wishbone. The clavicle is what holds the front of the breast together and protects the crop. That's the design of it. So it's the wishbone that we all had when we were kids, all fight over who's going to break the wishbone, get the biggest piece, and be lucky and all that stuff. But at any rate, it's basically upside down there, with the pointed part being down towards the bottom of the bird and the upper part spanning out and attaching to the top of the breast on either side of the neck. But just go to the little V right there and then come up under the lower part of the beak to use your measurement. It gives you a rough idea to give you a marker or an indication that you're into the crop.
Okay, you know, and then you mark that, like with a magic marker or a piece of tape?
Magic marker, a piece of tape, whatever you've got, you know, to do it. You can go to the, to get this tubing, you can go to the any store that sells tropical fish and bring your syringe with you without the needle on it and fit the tubing directly to the syringe. Get something that's nice and tight, get yourself a couple, 3 feet of it. Can't be more than 30, 40 cents a foot, more than likely. And, you know, go home and do the measurement. Then what you want to do is make up whatever you're going to feed them. I don't really care as long as what you're feeding them is going to be liquid enough that it's going to pass through the syringe and the tubing. And then load your syringe, load your tubing up, and keep loading your syringe till your tubing and your syringe are full. And this is optional. You can take to make things a little bit easier, take a little bit of any kind of cooking oil, put it over the tubing. Slip that tubing down the bird's throat, right over top of the tongue. Keep going to the big giant hole in the back of the mouth. And when you get close to your mark, just slowly empty the syringe into the crop. Now you want to watch the crop as it expands in the bird's chest. Again, what I said before: too much liquid, it'll come right back up into the mouth. The bird will breathe, and then it'll be dead. A lot of people think they can do it easier by doing it with a syringe. You know, whatever works for you is fine with me. I'm not there and I don't have to do it, but it is much safer to do the tubing versus a syringe, because while you're putting liquid in the bird's mouth, you're right up there where the glottis is. And
okay.
If the bird decides to breathe as you're pushing the liquid in, could very easily aspirate.
Get in the lungs.
And the same thing for the bird not being able to hold its head up. If it can't hold its head up and you're really filling the crop, any pressure on that crop is going to push liquid back up into the mouth. And then when the bird breathes, then you got a dead bird. So be careful with it along those lines. Very simple to do, very easy to do. And then the other question I get asked is, how often should I do it? Watch the crop as it starts to go down and becomes less visible. Go back and put some more in it. The more you do it, the better chance you have of getting the bird to recover from whatever anomaly it is that's causing you to do this in the first place. So tube feeding is relatively easy. It's not very difficult. Nobody should be afraid of it.
Would you say watch the crop? Would that be something like every couple hours to see if it goes down? Or?
Yeah, and we've talked about this before. On average, on average, it takes anywhere from 2.5 to 3.5 hours for anything that goes in the crop to come out the back end. More liquid diets may make it through a little bit quicker because they don't have to really spend much time in the proventriculus, and they don't spend much time then in the gizzard and that kind of thing. They just kind of leach out. So that may be a little bit different than feeding a more solid food. But on average, that's what you're looking at. If you did it every 3 hours, I think you'd be just fine. I've got somebody now who's able to put 60 cc's into the crop without any real trouble.
It's 2 ounces. Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's not a lot. It seems like a lot, but and again, if the bird can't hold its head up, you're going to run into a little bit of a problem. So you want to put in less, and then it means that if you're putting in less, then you have to feed it more often. That's all. But it shouldn't become a problem for anybody. Nobody should be afraid of it. It's a relatively simple, non-invasive type of a thing. No bird should really die from it. It just shouldn't happen. But anyway, that's the scoop on that. One of the other things that I did want to touch on was I've been fielding a few questions, as you might expect, about West Nile virus and chickens. It is more of a problem for you as a human than it is for your chickens. I wrote about this back during the big scares we had. The first outbreak of it was in New York City in 1999. And it progressed from there, started spreading across the country. And we've talked about this. This is the controlling West Nile virus is no different for you as a chicken keeper than trying to keep fowl pox from your birds. This is a mosquito-borne disease. So therefore, if you're diligent about mitigating and getting rid of your problems associated with mosquitoes as best you can. I realize that there are parts of the country where people just inundated with mosquitoes, mm-hmm. you know, and it's a tough thing to do. By and large, and there are exceptions to every rule, but by and large, chickens do not really suffer from the West Nile virus. They are actually used as sentinels to go into areas where they're put in varmint-proof cages, and then they come and get them every couple of days or so, and then they bleed them to see if they've been exposed to West Nile virus. Generally, in a chicken, the virus will go through it in roughly about 4 or 5 days. You might see some ruffled feathers. You might not. But I wrote about this a good while back, and there were a lot of interesting things to look at back then, and they still apply today. Now, I did get out a chart that I had, and this is not my chart, but it's a chart that I had used, West Nile virus 2003 human cases as of September 19th, 2003. And then I took that and I compared that to the West Nile virus human infections reported as of August 14th, 2012, so very close, about a month apart. And when you look at it, you know, the big flap is Texas and everything else. And if you looked at Texas in 2003, they had 292 cases then of West Nile, and they had 7 deaths. They have about a third more now. They've got a total of 336 and twice as many deaths. So it's on the rise, but, I think they've gone about it all wrong. Education is the best policy, mitigating as many of the instances where mosquitoes breed and stuff.
Just to follow on that, Peter, there's a couple of comments in the chat room for you, but I would bet, given the population in Texas has probably risen since 2003, I would guess the incidence might be about the same with those numbers, just as a thought.
They break it down now into a little bit different, ones that are what they call neuroinvasive and non-neuroinvasive cases. There's a difference. The one being ones that where they do get the encephalomyelitis from the disease versus those that just get the disease. That's running 200 to 136. 200 that get the encephalitis type, and 136 or so that don't get that. It's an interesting thing, but and it's so long ago that some of these things, 9-10 years, a big difference. Population changes. There may be a lot of people there now in that state that have never been exposed to it before. This is predominantly, but not always, a disease that affects older people. People with compromised immune systems are more likely to have severe symptoms. Small children and that kind of thing. But
Dave, says is only about 20% of people that actually get infected ever show symptoms. Just as so the incidence.
Yeah, I don't know the exact number of people who because those things just don't always get reported. You know, sometimes you may not feel well for a couple, 3-4 days, but you don't go to your doctor either. So therefore, if it was West Nile,
right,
you'd know it, and nobody else would know it. So unless it's been reported somewhere along the line, you know, they're not going to know about it.
Oh, maybe that's what's wrong with Andy today. Maybe he's got
I got mosquito bit while I was doing one of my walks, and now I'm kind of just, I've got it, but I'm a part of that 20%. Won't go to the doctor.
Yeah, really. Anything but that, almost.
So, what I wanted to do with this is I don't want to spend the whole show doing this because I don't think it's necessary. I just want people to know that it's out there if they don't already know. If they want to know how to protect their birds, the best thing you can do is to have no standing water around your place. Of all, any description, any brackish, dirty water that's been around, old tires, buckets, whatever, your your little red wagon from when you were a kid that's sitting out behind the barn that's rusted to all get out, and it's filled with 3 inches of water. It's been sitting there forever. That's your place where you're going to get your mosquitoes. The other thing you can do for your birds, and this goes for whether you want to do it for fowl pox or anything else, you can, to a degree, protect them by getting some garlic juice and just lightly coating their head and their neck and stuff with it, and any exposed part of the bird should help mitigate that, because the mosquitoes don't like it, and they'll stay away from them.
You know what else works for that, Peter, is Listerine. Honest to God.
I think I heard say that once before, yeah. I don't know why
it really came from the people's pharmacy, so I'm turning this into the poultry's pharmacy. But, well, I tried it, gave it a real acid test up in Vermont when I was up there several years ago, and, of course, mosquitoes there can carry you off almost. And so I was putting Listerine all over my hair, and honest to God, I didn't get any bites that I know of. Another question here, Peter. Apple cider vinegar, does that help keep the mosquito population down?
It certainly would if you put that in any kind of water, sure. But you know, birds are, you know, if you're worried about the drinking water of your birds, mosquitoes are not going to set up shop in your drinking water of your birds, not at all.
That's true. They don't have enough time to, at least they don't.
Well,
water
it's not dirty enough for them. It's not brackish enough for them. You know, they don't hang out in fresh water as a general rule. They hang out in the dirty muck that's in your gutters. You know, the rotting vegetation that's in your gutter that became wet 2 or 3 days ago from a light rain, that kind of thing. That's where they love to hang out. And like I said, any old tires, any place where the water is brackish and generally crappy. That's where they hang out. You know, an old mud puddle that's been around for 2 weeks or whatever, or you know. That's where they're going to be. They're not going to be in your fresh water. But by the same token, the apple cider vinegar is not going to hurt you know, the birds at all.
Yeah. Well, you know, I was surprised, and one of the reasons I haven't set it up this summer is I had a nice little water fountain about 3 feet tall and in a relatively large bucket for the animals to drink out of, the dogs and the cats. And I'll be darned if they didn't get mosquito larvae in that. And so then I put just a little bit of olive oil on top of it. And I guess that's supposed to smother the little larva, but then the animals wouldn't drink it. So, so I don't have it set up. But I love hearing the sound of it. Our little coop in the chat room says they put goldfish in their duck pond, and they'll eat the mosquito larva. It just disappeared in a day.
And that may work too. And that may work too. Yeah, there isn't any question about that.
Well, maybe that's why I should just put some goldfish in this little water. It seems like a cruel thing to do to the goldfish, though. You know, because they don't have much room. I mean, it'd be awfully boring swimming around in there.
Well, at any rate, we'll move on just a little bit here with this thing. So.
okay.
Your chickens would be affected for the most part, not at all. Generally not something that you would see, but the chickens would get what we call a viremia, which means a circulating virus in their bloodstream. Most chickens would likely be immune for life once this takes place. Generally, the virus will not circulate in their bloodstream for very long.
Peter, quick question.
Yeah.
Is that true with people too? Like, if I get exposed to West Nile virus and I get the antibodies to it, will that protect me for life?
I don't know that. I know that in certain instances that it is. It is transmissible through blood transfusions. Now, how long that would be, I don't know. I've never investigated. I got enough trouble trying to figure out what's going on with chickens and stuff without trying to figure out what's going on with the human part of it. But as far as chickens are concerned, it would probably circulate in the bloodstream from 1 to 5 days. They'd most likely be immune, generally for life. And the same thing applies to chickens that would apply to humans. You have a chicken in poor health, compromised immune system. they may actually then start to show symptoms, and the symptoms for chickens would be basically the same as you might see for a human fever, especially if it strikes the neurological part, the brain. You'll see incoordination, loss of motor control, convulsions, tremors, muscle weakness, paralysis, death, any of those things. But by and large, we just don't see it in chickens. Most of your free-flying birds are much more susceptible to it, much more susceptible to it. And some mammals as well. I remember there were some black bears in the state of New Jersey, and there were, I think they ran some tests on some of those animals. There was a small population, but only a handful, not even a handful of them, not even 1%. I think there was 50 or 60 bears that were involved in this, and less than 1%. I think it was close to a 0.5% were showed positive for it.
Well, hey, Peter, listen to this, and then we'll just take a short commercial break. This is from the Baltimore Sun, and it says as many 3 million Americans may now be immune to the West Nile virus thanks to the antibodies they produced after being infected by the bite of a mosquito.
Mm-hmm.
And it says 0.1% of the population, about 300,000 people, acquire the new West Nile infections each year. Most of them never experience any symptoms of the disease.
Yep.
And this is according to the Journal of Emerging Infectious Diseases.
Yeah.
How cool
and,
is
you
that?
Know, and none of that surprises me. It's nothing that hasn't been said before. But if you want to look at the states that have trouble, you know, exactly why Texas is having so much problems with the West Nile, it must be in areas where it's wet. And where there's a lot of this, you know, either ponds or canals or whatever. You know, I know Louisiana with all the bios and stuff. I mean, Lord, mosquitoes down there are just a fact of life. But as of now, Louisiana doesn't have anywhere near the problem that Texas has. There's only been 37 cases in Louisiana. Now, does that mean the people in Louisiana are because of the of their exposure to the mosquitoes over the years have become immune to it? I couldn't say, but I think it's an interesting thing to note that there is almost six times as many people with it in Texas as there is in Louisiana. So go figure. And Oklahoma, double digits.
And they've had a drought this year, haven't they?
Yeah, double digit states. Triple digits would be Texas. Double digit would be Oklahoma, Mississippi, Louisiana, California with 12, if you want to call it a double digit, just barely. But everybody else is 0 or 2, 3, 8, 7, 5, 4, 6. So, you know, it's not nationwide as of August 14th. The total number of cases nationwide has only been 693, 26 deaths. So,
or more people than that die in hospitals every year.
And
100,000 die in hospitals.
Yeah, I brought this up because the news media gets a hold of something,
here.
And granted, 200 people in Texas is an interesting factor if you take that into consideration and look at the state on a nation on a statewide basis. 200 people is nothing.
And
I'm not trying to imply that people don't count here. That's not what I'm saying.
That's right. Until you're one of those 200 people.
Well, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And I agree with that. But what I'm saying is that educating the people, just like we try to do every Monday on this show,
really
about different aspects of things.
Not
terrorizing
the people.
The more you know, the better off you are. The better off you are, the more powerful you become as a human being. Nobody can pull the wool over your eyes if you know what the truth is. If you believe in all the gobbledygook, that's a different story. But I don't like the way they're going about doing it down there. I wouldn't want to live down there with the spray and that crap all over the place. I'm sorry. I just think that there's other ways to go about it.
Oh, I agree.
The first line of defense is education. I don't care what anybody says. And, evidently they're not doing it, or I don't know. I don't know what the answer is. I'm not an epidemiologist, so I couldn't begin to even figure it out. But I just thought I'd bring it up. I wrote about it a long, long time ago, and I thought it was an interesting subject. This is mainly spread. There are a lot of different mosquitoes that can carry the virus, but the particular one, not that it matters. It's a Culex, C-U-L-E-X mosquito that is generally considered the one to spread this. Now, I don't even know why, because it's not my bag to figure out, but I don't know why horses are so susceptible to this. Horses, this is a deadly thing for horses.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a vaccine available for horses. Those that have horses or have had them probably know all about it, probably know more about it than I do as far as that's concerned. It's an amazing thing that we're seeing this again. And we did see this back in 2003. We did see, I think, Colorado at the time was a big deal. And some of your colder states where you wouldn't have expected it, let me see here, South Dakota, 675, even was more than Texas back then. Texas was a 292. Hmm. To, you know, who would have figured South Dakota, you know?
Who would have thunk?
Yeah.
Andy, are you with us here?
Absolutely.
Then and you would have seen, it was kind of weird because even in the cold states, Nebraska, 632, Georgia, only 11. Colorado back then was a big deal in Colorado, 1542. That's a lot.
Wow.
So,
yeah,
you know,
that's the number of cases of West Nile that Peter's talking about. Well, listen, Peter, let's take a short break.
Sure, go ahead.
Honor our sponsors, and then when we come back, we'll continue this, or if there's any questions that come up in the chat room, or if you have anything else to add. And otherwise, we'll go on to your next subject. Okay, so stay tuned. We'll be right
Ware
back.
Ware Manufacturing has been building quality hutches since 1983. Ware manufactures modern chicken hutches, barns, pens, and nest boxes designed especially for the backyard flock. Ware offers hutches and pens for every yard size and every chicken keeper's budget. Visit their website at waremfginc.com. That's waremfginc.com. Or call them to find a retailer near you at 1-888-824-7257. Ware Manufacturing. Critter-Cages.com is your one-stop shop for all your critters' housing needs. They stock a wide selection of supplies and equipment for rabbits, guinea pigs, hamsters, mice, rats, ferrets, chinchillas, chickens, and other small critters. Their chicken selection includes chicken barns, chicken coops, and chicken yards from top manufacturers. Your critters will love their selection of quality products, and you'll love their low prices. Visit them online at critter-cages.com. That's critter-cages.com.
Established in 1957, GQF has become the name to trust when it comes to quality products and superior customer service. GQF offers a wide range of poultry products, including incubators, brooders, feeders, waters, and much, much more. Give them a call at 912-236-0651 or visit them online at gqfradio.com. That's gqfradio.com.
Mount Healthy Hatcheries has been a hatching tradition for over 80 years. Home of the healthiest chicks, Mount Healthy Hatcheries offers a wide selection of bantams, turkeys, guineas, ducks, pheasants, and of course, meat birds and layers. Order online at mounthealthy.com, that's mthealthy.com, or give them a call at 1-800-451-5603. Don't forget to ask about their free bonus chicks offer. Mount Healthy Hatcheries, home of the healthiest chicks.
You have the chickens, the coop, and the run, but do you have the egg cartons? Don't put your beautiful farm fresh eggs in any old used grocery store egg carton. Impress your friends with your very own custom labeled egg cartons from eggcartons.com. They have a large selection of custom egg cartons, stamps, and labels to choose from. Pick out your new custom egg cartons at eggcartons.com. That's eggcartons.com.
How would you like a punch in the beak?
This looks like a job for
Super Chicken.
You get the super sauce. I'll don my super suit.
All righty. Welcome back. Our special guest today is Dr. Peter Brown. He's the chicken doctor. Of course, not a real doctor, but a chicken doctor might even be better. So, Peter, we were talking about West Nile disease. Any other thoughts about that?
I'll just wrap it up for you here just to give you a perspective. And this, again, plays to the news media, and their ridiculous approach to things. If you look at current stats, and these stats are easily available to you, these stats come from the Centers for Disease Control, and they have a whole section on West Nile, blah, 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 blah. But if you look at it, go state by state, and if you look at the total cases of West Nile in humans right now, as of August 14th, you're looking at a total of 693 nationwide. Okay, and out of that, you're looking at 26 people died from it. More than half of those, just slightly more than half of those, being in Texas alone. But if you look at the stats for 2003, okay, as of September, we had 4,416 cases of West Nile, and we had 84 deaths. So I don't see it, quite the same way that, and again, I'm no epidemiologist, but I know numbers. 693 doesn't equate to 440, 4416. I mean, that's almost 4,500 people nationwide, which, you start to look at it as being significant when certain states, you look at Colorado with 1,542 back then, but you look at Colorado now and they have one. Actually, three. Okay. So, yeah. So, I mean, it's a tough thing to figure out, and not for me to figure out. I'm just pointing out things to people. Just wanted, because people call me and ask me, about West Nile and their birds. So that's why I thought it was it's a hot topic in the news. My thing for everybody is protect yourself. Do the things that we've talked about as best you can. You can't grow and drain the bio. That I know you can't do. And you can't go out back and take the big pond that's been there for 40 years and drain it either. Maybe the weather will, but by and large, you can't do it, and you wouldn't want to do it. But it's just an interesting thing to look at the numbers and see, on a slow news day, I was doing my cardio rehab thing down at the hospital this morning, they have that Fox News on one, CNN on the other, and I'm about ready to puke over all of it. Well, they come around and they ask you if they mind if you change the channel. I said, yeah, I don't. I do mind. I said, turn it all off. Just soon, dude.
Yeah.
I'm sick of it.
Really. I agree with you. So, Peter, in your opinion, given these numbers that you've just amazed me with, is it justified to spray all this pesticide all over heaven and earth?
Not to me. Not when there are methods to to educate people. I think the thing that we get all lulled to sleep in this country is that whatever the hot topic is in the news that the news media wants to talk about, that's the order of the day. And everybody in our daily lives of running around doing what we do, all of us, I'm guilty of the same thing, okay? You don't pay attention to some of the things you probably should be paying attention to. I'm a prime example of it. There isn't any question about it. That's why I refuse to call myself a heart attack victim. Victims are usually where somebody else has preyed upon you and done something to you.
That's right.
And nobody twisted my arm to eat anything. Nobody shoved a taco down my throat. Nobody shoved a cheeseburger down my throat. Nobody said, hey, these fries are good here. They're boardwalk fries or whatever, and get the big bucket because it's cheaper. Okay? Nobody ever did that to me. Nobody twisted my arm up behind my back till I said, okay, I'll take it, you know.
We're all responsible for ourselves, aren't
well,
we?
Well, I mean, I'm just trying to look at it logically. I mean, for me, that's how I interpret it, you know. So I'm not a victim. I'm a victim of my own stupidity. How's that? Okay. And you get caught up in all of the nonsense, and everything else. But everybody's kind of forgot about this disease. And you know, with these viruses, what goes around comes around. And when it comes around, it may be nastier than the last time. It may not be. I don't see where this is anywhere near as bad as the 2003 outbreak that we had. Okay. But
yeah.
You know, that's from my perspective.
It seems like we've become a drama society. You know, everything's just drama,
sure. Hyped
up thing. That's
well, that's what sells. I mean, it to a lot of people. I mean, it doesn't. You know, reasonableness sells to me, and education sells to me. I'm more interested in educating people that want to listen. If you don't want to listen, that's okay. And you know, if you think you know more than everybody else, that's okay too. You know, you've heard me say that many, many times. I'm not upset with anybody. If you think you know it all, that's cool. You know, I'm still learning. I'm 66 and still learning every day. And a couple of things I've learned.
Oh, you baby. You're just a little baby here at 66.
I've learned the hard way.
Yeah, well, we all do. Are you going to be at the Lucasville show in Ohio in October?
I'm not going to Lucasville anymore. No. Prior to my heart attack, I had already made up my mind that I was not going to do Lucasville anymore. It has nothing to do with the people or anything else. Too far to go for me to make nothing. And the Ohio National, I'm not going there anymore either. And
you're not. Okay.
So I didn't last year, and I'm not going this year. So I've cut out those shows, and I'm going to stick to my own backyard. The further show away I will do is the Poultry Congress up in Springfield, Mass. In January. I like that show.
And wait for the next Crossroads to come over in Indianapolis, right?
Never
in
again.
That big show.
When pigs fly. no, I wouldn't do that show ever again. They couldn't pay me to do it. They couldn't pay me to do it. So, but anyway, getting to all of this stuff, just be aware of it. Be aware that it's out there. I don't think most folks are going to have a problem with West Nile. Probably not for themselves. But you, again, mitigate your circumstances by eliminating the things that you can do, control the things you can, and not worry about the rest of it and go on with it. And I think everybody would be just fine. But I thought it was worth a great quote. I thought it was worth kicking around. And talking about especially the going and looking at the tube feeding as well, because that's more of an everyday thing for most people, tube feeding birds that get sick and everything else. So the more they know, the better. It's really not that hard. I get people saying, "Oh my God, I'm going to kill the bird." Now, in all honesty, your chances of killing them by putting a syringe in their mouth and emptying that syringe into the mouth and allowing the bird to swallow. You stand a bigger chance of aspirating the bird that way than you do with a tube. It's really really no big deal. So, but the other thing I wanted to do, I wanted to try to wrap up. We had been talking about the bird's sense of smell, and we talked about whether they had a sense of smell, and it's been determined that they do in fact have a sense of smell. And that smells can be friendly, smells can be alarming, and that kind of thing. So for everybody out there who really cares, the sense of smell is determined as the bird's olfaction. That's olfaction, and that just means that their ability to smell and their sense of smell and that kind of thing, the things that are around them.
I wonder, Peter, if maybe industry, they were talking about breeding blind birds so they wouldn't feel so crowded. And I wonder if they want to breed birds that don't have a sense of smell either, so they don't get they don't smell that ammonia that comes up from
the
boards.
Well, I'll say
I'm
this.
I'm kidding.
I think that before we breed blind chickens, maybe we should breed some blind people. You know, just just loads of them. Now, to me, that
maybe we already have through the media.
Well,
it's just
well
a
you know, I yeah,
blindness.
I just think that whole idea is stupid. Here's a novel thought. How about better husbandry? What do you think? How about?
I think husbands really ought to be better. I totally agree with you. I mean, really.
I'm not going there. I'm not going there. Not going to be part of that. But you know, how about not having the ammonia in the first place? That's a good idea, I think. You know, and there
I think that's a great
know.
Idea. How about not having concentrated animal farms?
You know, an interesting thing.
But I'm not going to get political here.
You don't even have to get political. I think that it's inevitable that while big was better for a period of time and to produce food cheaper, I've come, you know, through different avenues, I've come to a different conclusion. None of it has to do with animal rights. It has to do with the sustainability. Unless we come up with some more fresh water,
really,
I don't see where we're going to be able to sustain big agriculture or even ourselves as humans or in the long haul. Now, I won't be around to see it, and Caleb might, but these things are coming. There are companies now, such as Coors Brewing Company. I read an article not too long ago. They are down in Texas, encouraging farmers there to grow different types of grass, which will control soil erosion, which will then make the rain stay in one spot. The Coors is actually.
Gee, what about bamboo?
Well, they're actually giving grants to. Well, bamboo is bad because bamboo grows once it gets a foothold, it grows anywhere and everywhere. And trying to stop it.
There are forms of bamboo that are the cluster bamboo, and they don't take off with like the runner bamboo does.
Yeah.
But of course, swales are really great too. Swales are swell to control water.
You know, they are down. They're giving grant money to farmers. I can't remember what area it was. It's a couple months ago that I read the article, but. Because of the amount of water that is used in brewing. It's a tremendous amount of water. I can't remember the exact amount, but it's huge. And to sustain these things, between that and agriculture and human needs and so on and so forth, it will be a tough go down the road. And
did you just say brewing, like to make beer or
whiskey?
Oh, yeah.
The okay. Tremendous amount of money, not money, but tremendous amount of water used in the beer-making process. And I can't remember how many gallons of water they were talking about, but it was huge. So, you know, from my perspective, better animal husbandry, taking care of the birds better, and I think you're going to see more and more of that. I've mentioned here before, you know, we're seeing already globally countries moving away from antibiotic use. There'll come a day in this country where you won't be able to buy anything for your backyard chickens unless you have a veterinarian in charge and you have a veterinarian's prescription for it. That's the way it'll be. Even your over-the-counter stuff now, there will be no more over-the-counter stuff. That'll all be gone down the road as things change politically. I do believe that you'll eventually see that because we're seeing little backwater countries now that probably should use the antibiotics on a lot of their people don't want it in their food that's coming into their countries either. And you know, they're rejecting stuff left and right all over the place. I just read a report here not too long ago. Some country was using a growth promoter in their chickens. And
good.
It wasn't the United States. It was some other little. I don't remember. It was Brazil or some other country. They were using it and sending the chicken somewhere else, and the other place was rejecting it because of the residue that was there. Even though a lot of places it's an accepted product, even here in the U.S., these other countries don't want it. And my point being, if the little ones are doing it, it won't be long before the rest of them. And in Europe, you can't hardly do anything. If you're raising backyard chickens in Europe, it takes an act of God to get anything for your backyard chickens as far as any kind of medication is concerned. So it's coming. It's something that is there. You know, I hope to have a more of a, I guess you'd call it holistic or natural, whatever you want to call it, program, you know, in place right after the first of the year, working on it real hard. And, you know, it's, but the government's going to fight you every step of the way. That I can tell you right
yeah.
now. Yep. Because I imported some stuff, had it hung up on customs, and then they sent me a letter, and I've read the letter five times, still can't figure out what the hell they want. So,
It's kind of surprising, too, isn't it? Because you'd think they'd want the retail market for the backyard fox. It's growing so fast. I mean, it's quite a sales cadre, I guess you'd say. But
well, the government talks in gobbledygook. That's how they operate. That's how they keep you confused. Because if they keep you confused, then you'll never know the true story. And I'm thoroughly convinced of that. I mean, you know, like I said, I got this letter from them. And I've read it many, many times. I had a couple of friends of mine read it, and you know, they've looked at me like I had three heads. I say, "Yeah, I didn't read it." You know, I mean, I didn't write it. And it's called a hold designated summary of current status of individual lines. Status changed since the previous notice. Read carefully the sections which follow for important information regarding these lines. Yeah. Do you see my point?
Yeah. Yeah, okay. It starts out right from the get-go.
Now, here, listen to this. Listen to this. This is very short. FDA will not request redelivery for examination or sampling if the products not released by FDA are moved following USCS conditional release to a location within the local metropolitan area or to a location approved by the FDA office at the number below. All products in this entry not listed above may proceed without FDA examination. This notice does not constitute assurance that the products involved comply with the provisions of the Food and Drug Cosmetic Act or other related acts, and does not preclude action should the products later be found violative. So what are you supposed to do? Are you supposed to put this in your closet and keep it forever or what? I don't know.
Well, one of the things that's interesting, though, Peter, with a lot of the antibiotics is they're really not effective anyway because of the drug resistance that has been evolving throughout the last decades.
Yeah,
so
it depends on what it is. You know, it's
it
all
of
this stuff.
It depends on what it is. Sure.
Yeah, it depends on what it is. It depends on what you're doing. I've run into it here as well. And I did want to share something else with you guys for a second here. Let me find this other email here. Hang on one second. I got involved with a person who had some birds who had bumblefoot. And this person had, very diligent person, by the way, was trying frantically to get this done and done properly. It had the birds to a veterinarian, and I'm not knocking the veterinarian. I'm just stating a fact. This person had taken them to a vet and spent quite a few $100s and got nowhere. Actually, was progressing and getting worse and worse and worse. And
sure.
The person then got a hold of me, and these were severe as far as the infection itself and trying to get rid of it, because some of it becomes a bone infection. And, a bone infection, human or otherwise, and certainly in chickens and their feet, is very difficult to get a handle on. Okay. Now I'm just going to read one line from you here, and so don't fall over when I read this line, because these birds have recovered. They've made a remarkable recovery, but it has been one hell of a battle. So I just want to point out to people, we talked about looking at your birds, watching your birds, sitting out in the yard with 5-gallon bucket. It is extremely important. This person took it personally, went after this stuff, and has done an amazing job. But and there were several birds, okay? So I'm going to read directly from this particular email, and just a line or two, that's all. So the person says here, says, I counted up all the days bird number one was on antibiotics, and it tallies up to exactly 200 days.
Wow. Holy moly.
Yep. And, she goes on to say, she was surprised that, the bird kept on laying during this period of time.
God bless it.
Didn't become crop bound. Yeah, and because we you know, we did some things that, you know, you normally wouldn't do, but we had no choice because we used a particular antibiotic and it worked for a while and it stopped working, and we moved on to other antibiotics and stuff, and then we moved giving the antibiotic over a longer period through the day, giving it three times, and then in the middle sticking a different antibiotic in, and the synergism between the two, you know, made all the difference in the world. So this has been an ongoing thing that I, this is, you know, a lot of people don't know, this is what I do behind the scenes, you know, working on these things, trying to get these people, you know, past it, and you know, it's just one of those things. I won't go on to the accolades. I don't think they're necessary, but you know, I, for me, it's just another day at the office, and glad to have been a part of the recovery of the bird, because it's more important to me. But at any rate, let's finish up on this sense of smell and stuff. So, what does it all mean at the end of the day? We were talking briefly. We've been on and off this subject so many times, hard to even follow where the hell we're at. But we were talking about...
We ended about the smell of olfaction is what the last word I had in my
right.
notes here.
So
olfaction.
Birds can, and they're very sensitive too. Their sense of smell is very keen. You know, they obviously, as we all probably know, they can smell blood. And that's what draws them to each other. When somebody has a break in the skin or starts bleeding and stuff, they come. Everybody partakes in the demise of the bird that's been injured. And part of that is probably a throwback to their earlier times when it's a survival of the fittest. And
when they were dinosaurs, right?
Yep. When they were feeding in the jungle and everything else, it was just something else to eat. And because of the size of their brain, obviously not as sophisticated as some of us propose to be. But so they do have that sense of smell. And certain smells, blood would be an alarming smell to them. And that's why, like I say, that's why everybody comes running. And there are other smells that they are unfamiliar with that may cause them to become aggressive. And
like what? Do you have any examples of what might do that?
In other words, if you are to change your clothes today, you might not you might find that when you went into your coops, certain birds, and it doesn't apply to every bird across the board, but you might find that certain birds who are not familiar with your new odor, your new perfume, your new laundry detergent, might shun you a little bit till they get to hear your voice or get close to you and realize that that you're not predatory, that you're okay.
Interesting.
Yeah, we know this because birds that were we know this in two ways. Birds that were exposed in the latter parts of incubation, in the circadian incubation process, that were exposed to certain smells and then were exposed to those smells afterward in a feed. They, in a majority of the time, went to the feed with the smell that was given to them while they were in their shell. So we know that they can be influenced there. We also know that...
Peter, would you repeat that? I didn't... When they're in the shell...
When they're in the shell, usually these things will take place where they try these things on birds, but usually between the 16th and 18th day, maybe even the 19th day of incubation, while those embryos are incubating, they will expose them to a particular odor, and then after they're hatched, they will take that odor and incorporate it into some food, and they give the bird a specified period of time to either go to the food or not go to the food, and the majority of the birds that were hatched under that went to the food where the odor that they were exposed, where birds that were... Yeah, where birds who were not exposed to it ate either place didn't matter to them. Okay,
so is that one way of preconditioning unhatched chicks to eat commercial
yeah,
food?
Yeah, and this goes back now, if you want to throw this in better perspective. You said, you know, breed blind birds so they can't see how close they all are to each other. This goes back now to looking at the circadian incubation thing where we know that we can precondition birds to climate prior to hatching. And the way we do that is if we want them to be more cold tolerant, we will reduce the temperature for about a four-hour period during day 16 and a half, 17 and a half, and 18 and a half, I believe it is, okay? And over a four-hour period of time, just a few degrees colder, those birds will be more tolerant to cold. If we want birds that are going to be more tolerant to heat during that same period of time, we will raise it a couple of degrees. But just for a short period of time, and it has to be succinct. It's a special incubation process where they were able to quickly make that temperature change by a couple of degrees, and then after the four-hour period, bring it back down quickly. So it takes a special incubation process to do that. But it's all experimental, but it's a lot better than genetically altering the birds.
Well, in a way, it is. It is altering them, Peter, because it's altering the expression of the genes.
Well, yeah, but we're not. Yeah, you know, and that's a big difference between.
That's a big difference, yeah.
You know, between genetic engineering and stuff. So it's not going to harm anybody who consumes eggs or the meat from the bird. So versus putting hormones in cows so they produce more milk and causes more problems than it's worth. So. All of these things are done. I think there's a lot of better ways to do things, and science will eventually find them, and some of them will apply, some of them won't. As far as birds are concerned, so if you take their sense of sight, their sense of smell, so then we want to know, do they have a sense of taste? And it was always thought in years back that birds didn't have a very good or very well-defined sense of taste. And we know now that that's not true. Birds have a relatively well-defined sense of taste.
Mm-hmm.
And several weeks back, here's a question for people listening now. Several weeks back when we first started out on this, but we never got into the meat of it, I had said I wanted to know why when you watch a bird drink, they throw their head back.
Mm-hmm. I've wondered that too.
And then sometimes they'll shake their head side to side. Sometimes they'll go back and sample that same drink again. Other times they'll walk off. So I want to know what they're doing when they do that and why. What's the scoop on that whole thing, and how is that coming about? What is it that makes them do that? Why do they do it? What's the interest in that? From a bird's perspective. So in the meantime, we can talk just a few minutes here about the bird's sense of taste. Again, we said it was very well defined. And depending on what research paper you read, how old it is, how new it is, and everything else, there are roughly, give or take, 300 taste buds or so in the bird's mouth.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
And,
somewhere I came up, there was only like 26 taste buds, but that didn't.
No,
make sense,
that's not correct. And the reason for that is science today is by far so far advanced in the way they go about measuring these things and looking for these things. They look for neurological pathways that the taste is moved along in ways that I can't even explain because I'm not sure I understand it either, okay? So I'm not trying to sit here and tell anybody that I fully understand every aspect of all of the way a bird tastes and everything else, but I've got the basics down, okay? But they produce a protein that is in specific receptor cells in their taste buds called gustducin, and it's called a gustatory response. And this is how they determine how they taste, and so on and so forth. It's a very interesting subject. Much more, you know, much way over my head. I don't care to get that refined into it. You've heard me say before, you know, that they prefer water that's colder rather than warmer. And as the water gets warmer, they tend to drink less of it. And as it gets to their body temperature, they will back away from it even more. And as it rises above their body temperature, they will, in most cases, stop drinking and become dehydrated. So we know that they have all of these sensibilities about them. So what does it mean at the end of the day? How does this all tie in nutritionally with the bird and behaviorally? Well, between their sense of sight, their sense of smell, and their sense of taste, they have a pretty good handle on what they like, what they don't like, what's predatory, mm-hmm. what isn't predatory. If you're putting out a food or a water that is too acidic, they're not going to want to drink it. If it's too alkaline, they're not going to want to drink it. They're not going to want to eat it. So this may be, and there's much more work going to be done and being done on the chicken's sense of taste, smell, this, that, and the other thing. I just want people to be aware of the fact that they do, because chickens always get stupid chicken. Now stupid people.
There we go.
That's my perspective on it. Everybody's got their own take on it, and that's fine. But chickens are a lot smarter than we think they are, and the proof is in the pudding. And like I said, there are roughly 300 receptor sites or taste buds in their mouth. They're actually pear-shaped. They're very thin. They're very small. To give you an idea, they talk about these being between 40 and 70 microns in size.
Mm-hmm.
And to give you a perspective on that, when they measure plastic bags, they talk about that in mils, and 1 mil in a plastic bag is 25.4 microns. So if you look at 40 to 70 microns, you're looking at 1.57 to 2.76 mils thick. It's
pretty small, isn't it?
Yeah, not quite as thick as your average plastic bag that you got your trash in and your garbage. Matter of fact, your garbage trash bag may be thicker. So they are small, but they are numerous. They're all over in the mouth. The preponderance of them being in the back of the mouth, in the back of the tongue, and the floor of the mouth. They have them in the roof of the mouth. They have them on the tongue. Have them in the front of the beak, inside the mouth.
Peter, I was reading that the humans that our taste buds, they're not all on our tongue. So some are on the inside of our cheeks. There's some in the roof of our mouths. Some are even on our lips, and those lips ones are especially sensitive to salt. So, it's
salt
not just only about the tongue. Huh?
Salt and pepper,
yeah.
Your lips are sensitive to pepper. Put some pepper on them, see what happens to them real quick. Yeah,
yeah.
I agree with you. And I've not investigated the human part of it, but... I don't doubt that for a moment. Like I said, it's always been thought with chickens, and part of this came with the advent of the chicken genome. They were able to find some of these things. Then it said, well, they're there. Are they able to tell this? Are they able to tell that? I wouldn't say that they're as good at picking out their food as a hog might be. But they do have the taste buds, and most of them in the rear of the mouth, in the roof of the mouth. And
mm-hmm.
A very, very small percentage of them are actually on the tongue. So it is an interesting aspect of the chicken. And they will tolerate and prefer something that is slightly acidic, okay, from a pH. And, you can get pH strips in the store and measure pH of water and stuff to see. pH of 7 is considered neutral. Acidic would be 0 to 7. So just a little bit over 7 is something that they would really enjoy. That's why you have to be careful with medications. Lots of times you put a lot of water, different medications in the water, they may back away from it. Some of it may be due to taste. So if you can change that pH of that water, it may be more associated with the pH of the water than it is with the actual taste of the water. And then a basic is called alkaline, and that would be up from 7 plus to 14. So that's basically the scoop on their taste buds. And so if you're feeding them a food, then that doesn't smell good to them and is not is too acidic, they may not want to eat it either. So nutritionally, all of the olfactory senses of the bird have a play in what they eat, how they eat, where they eat, if they'll eat, in a lot of respects. When they're upset and everything else, they're not going to eat. They're not going to consume as much food. And we all know when they home in on something they like, they're just like humans and just like human kids. They'll keep eating the same thing over and over because they have developed a taste for it, in my opinion. But I think that's all I've got to offer on that. But anybody got any ideas about the why they throw their head around the way they do?
Oh, I think they're shaking their ears out. getting that neck exercise like they do in yoga, it's just part of their keeping their neck vertebrae loose and limber.
I could have probably gone into it deeper, but I didn't see any point in it. There isn't a whole lot more that's worth talking about, unless you want to talk about the actual neurological pathways and the receptors and everything else. Where I don't think it's the receptor cells in the taste buds will determine and identify the bitter and the sweet. Types of things that are there for the meat. And an interesting thing, some of the research showed that they're really not high on sugar, actually, per se. So I thought that was kind of interesting. But anyway, I'll answer the question then. The reason that or it's perceived to be the reason that they put their head back like that is they're sampling what they're eating or drinking.
It's like trying fine wine. You know, you take a little drink and then you can.
Because the majority of the taste buds are located in the back of the mouth and in the roof of the mouth, and they put their head back like that, it's they're running that stuff over the receptors there and then determining. And the side to side means that more than likely they're undecided as to whether they should continue to drink it or not, and or eat it. And if they do that and then they walk away, it means they probably didn't like it. And so it's an indicator. It's not a end-all, catch-all type thing, but it's an interesting thing for a bird that has been deemed stupid and expendable. I hate that word.
Yeah.
But, I was reading somewhere here not too long ago. People were talking about chickens, and somebody was talking about how people are with chickens that show and this, that, and the other thing. Somebody responded and said, "Well, it's just a chicken," and it kind of irritates me.
Yeah.
But they're good companions and a lot smarter than people give them credit for. That's for sure. So.
They are, and they deserve our respect, to quote Temple Grandin. they're here for us, and they deserve our respect.
Yeah, personal opinion, everybody's got their own opinion, and I would dare say anybody listening to the show here, more than likely, is pretty high on their chickens, so I don't think we have too many people out there that would disagree from that standpoint.
Yeah. Well, Peter, thank you so much. This has been absolutely fascinating as usual. I've got about 3 pages of notes here. I'm a note taker. I even go back and read them. That's the weird thing about me. I guess I'm
not weird. How you remember it? I only remember this stuff from doing it over and over and over when I talk to people on the phone and everything else. And I don't have to really go back and read anything. The only thing that I read to you today was a little bit of that email and those 2 charts. I have no way of remembering all those charts, but you know, I had saved the chart that I used back in 2003 that I got from the Centers for Disease Control, and then compared to that to the one I got off their website, and that's how I was able to give you those figures. But
yeah, I didn't expect you to memorize those figures.
I never could remember that many numbers. Not keeping straight anyway.
Yeah, okay. Well, Peter, thank you so much. And what's your topic for next week, next Monday?
I don't know. Whatever comes across my mind. We'll see what comes through the office here. Somebody's got an idea. They want to hear something. All they need is shoot Andy an email. He can shoot it to me, and we'll do it. Whatever it is, don't matter.
Okay, great.
Whatever you guys want to hear. As a matter of fact, I would actually prefer it that way, you know, rather than me pick a topic or whatever. Somebody's got something that's dear to their heart that they want to hear something about, got questions about, just shoot an email to Andy. He'll shoot it over to me, and that'll be next week's subject. Fine with me.
Okay, great. Well, I get questions, and often I like to bounce them off you just to make sure. Peter, thank you very, very much coming on. We look forward to next week.
We'll see you
okay.
then.
Okay. Yeah, see you then. Great. What I'd like to do is I've got some workshops and conferences coming up. If I could just go over that briefly out in California, and I'd love to see any of our... Okay, sorry about that. I'd love to meet any of our listeners if they would come up to meet us. One is at the National Heirloom Festival. It's in Washington State. I'll be talking at 1 o'clock on gardening with and for chickens. And then also on the next day, which is the 12th, I'll be doing the chicken whispering, discovering the chicken you never knew. Yeah, I got excited and cut out. What happened is I made a gesture and my headset went flying off. And then, so then on the 14th and 15th, I get so excited, it's true, I do. On the 14th and 15th, I'll be at Monticello for the Heritage Festival. I'll be doing a book signing and doing some workshops there at Monticello in Montpelier, Charlottesville, Vermont. So that's all I got. Whisper, any additional comments or anything to add before we close the show here?
No, not today. Thank you so much, Pat, for stepping up and dealing with that. I'm feeling a little bit better. I just went a few minutes ago, took a couple of Advil and drank a glass of water and just get settled in for the rest of the day. But we will return tomorrow. Let me tell folks about the rest of the week. Tomorrow we have Andrew Odom, founder of tinyrevolution.us. He'll be here talking about, again, his family's lifestyle and trying to live a minimalist lifestyle and the progress they've made on their small home and their land search and all kinds of other interesting topics he said he was going to talk about tomorrow. So that's really good. Wednesday, we've got a small business owner coming on the show, and she's going to be giving us the highs and lows about being in business. She's got a flock of many different breeds, and she actually sells hatching eggs and ships chicks all over the country, small scale. And so we'll be talking to her on Wednesday. Thursday is Richard Frudenberger, publisher of Back Home Magazine. And then I think we'll be on this Friday for another fun Friday. So that's going to look like looks like what it is for the rest of the week, and we hope everybody can join us Monday through Friday, 12 p.m. right here Eastern Standard Time on Blog Talk Radio. We say if you can listen every day at noon, not only will your day go by faster, but your week will go by faster too. And next thing you know, we'll be saying, "Hey, it's Fun Friday." All righty, Pat, take it away. Thanks so much.
Okay, well, thank you, Whisper. Today, our special guest was Peter Brown, the chicken doctor from First State Vet Supply, and we've been talking about West Nile disease as well as how to tube a chicken if you find one that's just not eating. That's Chicken Doctor DR at FirstStateVetSupply.com. Thanks to our chat room chickeneers. They were certainly lively today and had a lot of comments. And, of course, BlogTalkRadio.com provides our radio, chat, and the video services. Andy Schneider, we know you're going to just bounce back right and left, is the Chicken Whisperer, and of course the creator of the show and the wind beneath our wings, which is why we fly so far and have gone for so long. I'm Pat Forman, and from all of us, absolutely all of us, may the flock be with you, quoth the chicken, evermore. Blessings to everybody.